The other day, I watched a reaction video of these two guys watching it.
I just watched a reaction video of this random guy watching it.
So I was like, well, I mean, that kind of suffices. I really don't have to watch it again. I watched pretty much, you know, the key points. It was probably like a 20-minute video.
Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy.
All right, so do we... I'm gonna be honest. Because we are recording right now.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of this episode, so I don't have much to talk about in the way of the episode.
You're talking about season two, episode seven.
Seven.
The Usual Suspects.
Yes.
Yes. I feel the same way. I wanted to do two things new this time, if that's okay.
How dare you? You didn't even run this past me.
Well, the one I did.
What kind of... Oh, well. In that case, okay.
So I was looking up... I randomly got onto how the episodes are ranked.
Mm-hmm.
There were two different people that I saw that did episode rankings. And one was from Decider.com. It was actually a list of 300 episodes. So this was from last year, February of last year, where this girl... Jessica Mason made this list for Decider.com. Okay. And then there's another one on Thrillist.com, which was every episode up to that point, which was in 2016.
Okay.
So that's a little older. But I just wanted to see how, like, they compared, you know, where their rankings were.
These two episodes?
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to do it. If people like it, I'll do it, you know, for future episodes also.
Okay, well, how did they say how they rank them?
I think it was
like based on the
preference.
Information. Okay. I mean, I feel like with these kind of episodes, unless you're going to give a bunch of spoilers away, there's not really a way you could, I mean, this, okay, so The Usual Suspects, I thought the acting, because it was a different way of filming, because it was filmed in the style of, like, crime dramas.
Yes.
And kind of X-File-y.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was super creative because they haven't done it up until now. And I thought, like, Jared Padalecki's acting of Sam's acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard because I don't want to be like, Sam's acting, because it's not Sam. It's Jared Padalecki as Sam acting in a crime drama.
Right. There's a lot of layers.
Yeah. Well, and it gets so much more layery, obviously, as it goes on, because there's another episode that gets even more creative. Once Misha jumps on board, and Misha is just perfect in it and hilarious.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So that alone sets The Usual Suspects up differently than other episodes. So I give it creativity point.
Yeah. I like the way it was shot.
Yes.
I like that, you know, you see one thing happen and then you go back and find out why that thing happened pretty much. And
this was a darker episode, just even in the lighting.
Yeah.
Like, there really wasn't much, like, maybe some spotlight, some overhead lighting. But other than that, there's no real daylight shots. There's no, it's very just overwhelmingly dark.
Yeah.
And I love Linda Blair. I thought it was great that she was in this.
Oh, it was so, I actually have a list of people that were in this episode.
Oh, they peppered so many people in this thing.
Yeah, that were in other things. And I'm like, that person looks really familiar. What were they in? I have that all later.
All right, so we got lists.
So the episode rank. These ones, there's the next week, I think that, or not, the next episode we're going to talk about, I think those ones are pretty closely ranked, but in this one, the Decider.com one, which was the Jessica Mason, who this was the best of the 300 episodes, but from worst to best. So this ranked 126th with her. And she
interesting.
Said, a detective played by the wonderful Linda Blair gives the boys their first brush with the law in a real way. It's more of a murder than a ghost story, but it's still spooky and tightly written. So I think she's going off of how the episode was done, probably, and not the content.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And she's accurate on all the counts. Like, I agree very much with everything she just said.
Yeah. So then this person, Gladstone. Is
it Joey Gladstone?
I don't know. It's the only name they had on there.
Oh, God, Joey!
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, cut it out.
Ah!
one's going to listen to us now. I'm sorry.
This person sits in their basement with their woodchuck puppet, and they watch Supernatural. Okay, so Gladstone from Thrillist.com. Remember, this is from 2016, so there's been a couple hundred more episodes since then. Mm-hmm. Whoever this person is, they rated it 223rd in their list.
I mean, even being an older episode, I kind of agree more with that.
Yeah. They said that Linda Blair's guest stars is a tough cop with limited acting range, a bad episode about a bad cop.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I agree more with your girl, Jessica, than I do Gladstone. Sorry, Uncle Joey.
Sorry, Woodchuck Puppet.
Because I don't think they limited Linda Blair. I think they just gave her a very specific character to go with.
Right.
And I think with this episode, too, they kind of, because they wanted to make sure that you got that something was extremely off and that it wasn't just a normal episode.
Yeah.
They kind of went over the top with how the cops acted.
Yeah, it was a little...
It was very, like, when you watch CSI Miami...
Oh, God, what's that guy? The redhead
guy? Jeff Caruso.
Yes, with he takes his glasses off.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I felt like this whole episode encompassed, which is that over-the-top, like, oh, my God, here we go.
Yes. Yeah, one of those really over-the-top, like, crime drama. Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Okay, and then I had another segment, if you will, that I wanted to do real quick. And, you know, we can pick an order another time if you want to do it a different way.
Okay.
But our friend Brittany on Twitter.
Brittany!
Let me get her Twitter handle correct because I want to give her full credit. Oh, and there she is as soon as I open up. Brittany is at BrittShay28.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi, Brittany.
If you're listening, hopefully you are. If not, I'll tweet at you.
We'll let you know to listen.
Yes.
She posted this like Urban Dictionary thing the other day, and it was like a Supernatural Urban Dictionary. And I was like, no shit, they actually do that because that's hilarious. So I've actually been looking them up, and they're so funny.
Oh my God, I would expect nothing less.
So I figured like maybe every episode we do, or you know, where I feel like I need to pepper one of those in there.
Ooh, I like it.
So I have one for today.
Yes.
So this is what Urban Dictionary says Supernatural is.
Okay.
So this one is from, I have two definitions. This one is from May of 2016. Salt circles, holy water, sexy demons and angels, sexy hunters, chick flick moments, family drama, self-sacrifice, car love, beer, karaoke, and possessions. And then you know how they give like the example sentence?
Mm-hmm.
It says, how do they make such perfect salt circles? That's so supernatural. So that was the person who wrote that was Supernatural Things.
Okay.
So then I Know I'm Crazy wrote in June of 2013, so this is a little further back, a show that will rip your heart out and stomp on it.
Wow.
And the example was like two people talking, and I was like, are you okay? No, I was just watching Supernatural. Oh, okay, I'm here for you, bro.
I like the fact they even use bros.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
They're so funny. And you can like look up any, like one I looked up was like Dean Winchester, so I'm gonna do that one, you know, another day, but
oh God.
Just the things that people write is just hilarious.
I mean, okay, so in that same vein, if you were to write, I'm gonna throw this at you, I didn't even think about it, it just came off the top of my head. Ha, you're on the spot now.
No, I don't do good at these things. It's a pop quiz. It's a pop quiz.
Pop quiz.
No.
The pressure is too much. Oh, I flunked out of school. I did not. I did not flunk out of school. Kids stay in school.
We both graduated. We have degrees. It's fine.
Even Dean went to school.
It's true.
Okay, so if you were to describe Supernatural, if you were to create an Urban Dictionary definition, what would yours say?
I don't know.
Bear in mind, you do it again, I'm going to ask you.
There would be pie. Dean and Pie.
Dean and Pie. A ghostly love story.
Thank God that people that listen to this know that I'm like quick witty, you know, like off the cuff.
Yeah.
Funny. I can't be put on the spot like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to play off of somebody.
And I mean, I'm here.
I know, but it's like you're just asking me, like, hey, what would you – I give no freaking clue. What would you do, Liz? You're good at that, though.
Okay. All right. Fine. I knew it would come back to haunt me. I didn't, but I was preparing in my mind's eye.
See, you had more time to think about it.
Yeah, but I was helping you. It wasn't what I was going to say.
I know. I failed. I'm sorry.
Two brothers on the longest road trip of their lives and deaths and lives with pie, some beer and whiskey. The road goes on.
See, yours was good.
Supernatural.
Oh, and then the opening.
And scene.
Okay, do we want to get into it? I have an outline.
Okay, let's go. Give me the outline of season 2, episode 7, The Usual Suspects, which aired November 9th, 2006.
Oh, look at you.
Boom.
Okay, Sam and Dean investigate the murders of a lawyer and his wife who claimed to see a ghost before they died. Local detectives arrest Sam and Dean for double murder before they are able to find the ghost.
Ooh.
And I tried really hard, I want you to know right there, not to say C. I said Sam and Dean. Okay, and then this is where I got nothing.
I mean, it started off pretty, like, right in it.
Oh, it jumped, yeah. Busted
from
through the door.
The beginning. So this, where, the location we're at right now is Baltimore, Maryland.
Ew, I mean, yay.
Good old Baltimore, Maryland. Sorry. Which, I mean, I guess to be a cop in Baltimore, like, you gotta be a hard ass.
I would think, yeah. Kind of like New Yorker.
They're investigating the murder of a lawyer, Tony Giles, who happened to be a friend of their dad's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Which, my first thought was like, okay, John has a lawyer friend.
Yeah.
Like a normal friend. A not normal a hunter, guy.
Not a hunter friend.
But yeah, this, whew, yeah, this episode sucked.
I know, I'm like, I don't even know what to talk about.
I'm sorry to everyone listening to this, and if you really liked this episode, God, I'm awful.
No, it was a cool episode, there just wasn't a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, unless we're gonna give a play-by-play, but even then that would suck, because there was so much jumping back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, that was cool. I mean, I can go to the notes I took when I watched it accidentally 20 minutes into it last week.
But we do find out that the Winchesters do kind of have a record.
Oh yeah, they go through their laundry list of, well, it was mostly Dean. They were trying to pin that, murder on Dean.
Well, because you think about it, Sam's been in school for how long?
Yeah.
Sam doesn't really have a rap sheet. And if he did, he went to college to be a lawyer. He stayed away from his dad and his brother, and Dean would, he's off with his dad hunting.
And then, Detective Diana Ballard, who's Linda Blair's character, was like, you need to cut him loose. You need to pretty much, like, give up your brother because he sucks and you have a future.
Yeah, immediately. She's like, yeah, dump him.
Yeah.
He'll be better off.
He's dead weight. He's just going to bring you down.
And you could see it on Sam's face. He's like, fuck that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do that.
Mm-mm.
And then we had crazy-ass Detective Sheridan.
Oh, that guy.
Played by Jason Gedrick.
Gedrick, yeah. That's the guy I kept looking at, and I'm like, I know that guy. Where in the hell do I know that guy from?
And he was the one who was, like, the hardest on Dean. He was gunning for Dean, literally and figuratively, this entire episode.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah, so they tear apart the Winchester records, mainly Dean, like you said.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much ready to just throw Dean away and lock away the key, put him in for life.
Yeah, they already have him counted as a bad seed.
And nothing really changes their mind until the ghost actually visits Ballard.
Yeah. Then she's like, okay, I'll talk to Dean. Maybe he's actually saying something that might be true.
Not to mention, so far we have two people who have seen this ghost. One of which even tried to call 911, Karen, when she saw the ghost.
Yeah.
They're dead. So obviously Ballard's going to look at that and be like, oh shit, maybe I'm next. And the only two people who fucking know about this, who I didn't believe before, are these two guys who may not have actually killed these people and may have been trying to save them.
Yeah, and Sam already got out, so he's on the case trying to figure out what's going on. Because he busted out of the interview room.
And So I do have to go back to the beginning of this episode
just like the episode does.
Back to the beginning. When they're grilling Dean, who we don't know is Dean yet because we don't see him,
right?
He's just kind of going through the laundry list. He's like, okay, at first I thought you may have just been stepping up your game, starting with little petty crimes like credit card fraud. But then he's like, this one puzzled me, struck me as odd. Grave desecration. What?
Hey, those graves were perfectly desecrated, okay? They were perfect rectangles.
And then all of a sudden he goes, and that's a long way from doing what we think you did, which is basically torture and murder a woman.
Yeah, like, so you dig up a grave that automatically you're gonna, like, rip apart a lady and slit her throat.
After you fake dead, so no one can totally pin it on you because you're not alive.
Yeah, and Detective Ballard didn't like his exaggerated death anyway.
He thought it wasn't real to begin with, apparently. Because they at some point kind of knew that Sam and Dean were going to come to Maryland, which blew my mind. Like, why did they really, they were on the radar? If Dean's dead, how did they kind of have an idea that they were coming?
Yeah.
That was my plot hole question of the night.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then at one point, Gedrick's character decides that he's just going to fucking kill Dean.
Yeah, like, how did that even come to pass?
How does that even happen? Like, they're in a station.
He shouldn't be taking him
anywhere. He should not be transporting him at all, first off. Let alone taking him alone.
Yeah, what was his Yeah, and like a van, too. Not even like a police car. They're like in a van.
Yeah.
But who was like, he's like, I'm just going to take him. And everybody's like, okay, cool, have fun. I don't know. But then when Ballard's with... She finds Sam, and they kind of figure out what's going on, and they find the girl who's like the death omen,
the one that they couldn't figure out for the longest time, that like Sam kept writing down over and over again thinking it was an anagram.
Yeah, what was it, like,
and the one that Dean kept repeating, Dana Schultz, which we finally kind of see, because like, which is interesting, because obviously Dean's repeating it almost crazily at one point. Sam's writing it down.
And it comes up on the computer.
Yeah, repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's completely gone.
Yeah. Did they find that girl on the wall? Did they figure out who she was? She had a name, didn't she? I obviously didn't write it down. Wasn't she like a prostitute or a drug addict that they caught when they were in the narcotics division?
Yes. Which is what makes them believe them a little bit more.
Right.
Because she's actually in the system.
Yeah. So then they found Sam and Detective Ballard find her in a wall of a building. And then she has a necklace on.
Mm-hmm.
That looks awfully familiar to one that Detective Ballard has.
Claire Becker.
Claire.
Claire Becker, 28 years old.
Yeah.
And she didn't disappear that long ago, which is, I think, why they were like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because she disappeared, like, less than a year before this all started.
She was pretty fresh in the wall.
Yeah.
But then, to go back, as this episode does, back and forth.
Everyone's going to listen to this. Sorry. We're just trying to give you the full Supernatural experience.
Wait till the second half. Trust us. You find out that Detective Ballard and Detective Sheridan are a couple.
Ooh, not allowed in the workplace.
No, they're partners and partners.
Ooh.
So anyway, you find out that Claire, the girl on the wall, has a necklace that looks exactly like Detective Ballard's that she got from Detective Sheridan. Yeah. Please tell me why that man did not take that necklace off of that lady when he put her in the wall.
People do some weird things.
I mean, I guess you think no one's going to find her in the wall of an abandoned building, but...
Well, the necklace, and when she's talking to Sam, it hits her that also about a year ago, like before this girl disappeared, heroin went missing from lockup.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Because that was when Sam's like, how well do you know your partner?
Mm-hmm. She's like, well, I fought well enough, but apparently not.
Then you have Pete, who just, like, comes up randomly with this plan to kill Dean in his head as he's transporting him to St. Louis, because he decides that no one's going to believe his story in St. Louis, rips him out of the van, and basically says, you're not going to make it. You died trying to escape.
Yeah, uh-huh, okay.
And then Diana pulls the gun on him, and then everybody's pointing guns at everybody.
God, I know. There's so much going on.
I love the fact that at one point that she just, like, looks at Pete, and she's like, why don't you buy me another necklace, you asshole?
Yeah, it was so great.
Touché.
And then up behind him comes Claire, the
Death Omen.
The Death Omen.
Good old Death Omen Claire.
I mean, she showed up at the right time.
Yep.
You know?
And it kind of goes away.
Yeah.
After Pete finally tells Diana what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, confesses to murder.
Yeah. And then she shoots him.
Yeah, she does. Well, because he turned the gun on her.
Yeah.
So really, at that point, it's self-defense.
I completely agree. I should have shot him sooner.
I do like the fact that at the end, she's like, yeah, so about those St. Louis charges, I can't help you guys.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Oh, well. They'll figure out a way around it.
Which, the way around it is basically like, I didn't see you guys, nothing happened here.
That's just like the last lady cop they had a run-in with.
They have good lady cops, because, like, I think the ending, if I remember right, Sam just, at one point, is like, she's a nice lady.
Yeah.
And Dean's like, yeah, for a cop.
Yeah. And then he's like, does she remind you of someone?
Oh, no!
I want some pea soup now. So funny. Okay, well, that was our horrible recap of...
Yep, sorry. But did you follow it? If not, go watch the episode. Don't worry. You'll forget it.
Our recap is exactly how the episode went, so...
If you followed it, great. We prepared you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. Are you ready for me?
Yes.
So I have a list of people who look familiar, in case you were wondering.
I was, because they did seem slightly familiar.
So number one is one we all should know, which is Linda Blair, played Detective Diana Ballard. If you don't know who Linda Blair is, she was in The Exorcist, which is a 1973 horror film that follows the demonic possession of a 12-year-old girl and her mother's attempts to rescue her through exorcism conducted by two priests. I was like, what does this arrow go to? At the end of the episode, like we just said, they make reference to The Exorcist.
Which is
walking away.
When she projectile vomits pea soup. Which, when he says, I somehow oddly want pea soup, I was like, well, why?
Like, seriously, she, like, you?
Oh, my God.
So gross. So gross. I'm going to admit, I tried to watch that movie. I was younger, so I probably shouldn't have watched it.
Mm.
But whenever she takes the crucifix,
She's,
like, jamming it, I couldn't do it. I had to shut it off. I watched it later in life. It still bothers me. The part still bothers me, though.
It's supposed to. And that disturbed a bunch of people. And she had an issue filming it, too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's good that there's things that still scare people. Because I think a lot of it we're, like, so desensitized to.
Well, and I think that also not only it scared people, but it's also meant to make you feel uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yeah. Oh, I still feel uncomfortable talking about it. I think because, in fact, she was 12. Like, I mean, she was young whenever she filmed the movie, so it wasn't like an adult actor, you know, portraying a younger person. Okay, let's move on. So, Jason Gedrick, who plays Dr. Pete Sheridan. Do you know where you've seen him before?
X-Files.
Yes. Well, he was on that. He was also on Outer Limits. He's been on a whole bunch of stuff. But what I know him from is, do you remember the 1986 military action film called Iron Eagle?
Vaguely.
Oh my God, it was such a good movie!
Okay, I'll watch it!
Louis Gossett Jr. was in it. I was reading about it and I didn't know this. The movie came out the same year as Top Gun.
Oh, so I watched Top Gun a lot more.
Yes, yeah, so Iron Eagle got like mixed reviews because Top Gun like took it all, I guess.
Fucking Top Gun.
But Iron Eagle is a military action film that is fictional, but it relates to real-life attacks by the U.S. against Libya over the Gulf of Sidra. But you can also see Jason Gedrick in the 2001 Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze Jr.
Jesus.
Where he plays Freddie Prinze Jr.'s brother, Mike. And in case you haven't seen Summer Catch, which I know I did, it's one of those rich girl, poor boy summer love things that they popped out, you know, in the early 2000s.
Yes.
So then there is Keegan-Connor Tracy, who played Karen Giles. She was in 40 Days and 40 Nights. She was also in Final Destination 2. And most recently that I know, she was in the Descendants movies because she plays Belle.
Oh!
Yeah. Belle and the Beast had Prince Ben. He's the one that's taking over Auradon.
Makes sense.
In case you haven't seen him.
I have not, no. Oh. Well, but I know of them.
There's three, and I feel you need to watch them. But she, Keegan Connor Tracy, is actually in three episodes of Supernatural, this being her first. She is also in an episode 2009. She plays Sarah Siege in Monster at the End of the Book. And she is also in a season 15 episode, season 15, episode 6, that aired November 21st, 2019, called Golden Time, where she is a witch.
Wow, she's all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's a little random shit trivia I got for you. Way more than I talked about during the episode already. The title of the episode references the movie The Usual Suspects, which itself references a line from Casablanca. The way this story unfolds is similar to the movie, told through a series of flashbacks during the course of a police investigation. There are also, I'm not going to get into every single one, but there are X-File references, two Shining references in this episode.
Still all about The Shining.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And there is a Chips reference. I love the TV show Chips from the 70s, where he says Dean calls Sheridan Ponch, which was Eric Estrada's character.
Yeah.
In Chips. If you haven't seen Chips, you need to watch it. It's a cheesy.
Wasn't there like a movie remake with like Dax Shepard?
Yes. I haven't seen that. But the original series was from 1977 and 1983. It's cheesy. It's funny. You need to see it. It follows California Highway Patrol motorcycle officers and the craziness that they see. Actually, whenever we got rid of cable and all we had was like the free channel that comes on your smart TV, the Pluto channel or whatever, Chips marathons. I sat there and watched it for days.
Well, that was like, I recently got into off subject, SWAT.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the only thing on the TV at the gym when I'd go running when I was training.
Yeah.
And I came back and Dustin goes, you know, that was a movie, right? So he wouldn't let go that it was a movie, only for me to be like, wow, why does this theme song sound so cheesy? Because it was originally a TV show. So I came back and I was like, it was originally like a 70s TV show. And he goes, yeah, but it was a movie. And I was like, okay, but it was a TV show first. And he's like, but it was a movie. I was like, whatever.
I was going to say, which came first?
The TV show.
Exactly.
Then the movie, then the remake.
Then the remake, the remake, the remake, the remake. So Dean doesn't slip a note. They transfer a note to Sam and addresses Sam as Hiltz and signs off as McQueen. It's a reference to The Great Escape. Steve McQueen played Captain Hiltz. Most likely this is code for one brother to stall, buying the other brother time to make their great escape.
Little known fact, I adore Steve McQueen.
Do you?
I love him.
Oh, do you like Lightning McQueen?
I also like Lightning McQueen. Not as much as Steve McQueen, but he's up there.
They also, Dean tells, not Sheridan, Ballard, I believe, about how they pick their motel rooms. So if they're going to get separated, like they're separated and they have to find each other. They pick their first motel room in the yellow pages in alphabetical order. And they sign in as Jim Rockford so they can find each other in case they get separated. Jim Rockford is from the 70s TV series, The Rockford Files. In this particular episode, the motel they stay at is the Aardvark Motel. Because, you know, AA is the first in the alphabet.
Well, so we also now know how to find them.
Exactly. And now we're going to be searching the first
searching letter. All the motels. Just calling all of them in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
Asking for Jim Rockford. Is Jim Rockford staying
Hello?
Here?
Is Jim Rockford there?
Been don't searching. Do that. Listeners, don't do that. Don't stalk people. They're not real.
If only.
We also don't know if they're, I mean, unless we can all get a bunch of people in random cities to do it, maybe we can find them.
What if that's what, like, when they go to conventions, if that's what they sign at the hotel as?
Oh, maybe.
Nikes.
Think you cracked the code.
Yes. Too late, though. Damn it. I know you've been wondering where it was. The Starburst clock makes a comeback in the motel room.
I've been looking for that thing.
Yeah. And you're going to have to wait to see it till next season, because this is the only episode in season 2 where the Starburst clock shows up.
You know, I have not looked ahead to see if that clock is in my favorite episode yet.
Oh.
But I think it is.
Okay.
But I'm waiting so that I can have a proper reaction.
SupernaturalFandom.com found an error. When Ballard is writing her report on the computer screen, she misspells measurements, just in case you want to shame her for it.
You'd think that they would have taught her how to properly spell back in the academy.
I mean, she just missed the E in the middle. Maybe she was typing fast. Okay, and on Hit It, are you proud of me that I use more than one website this time?
I am so proud of you. Look at you go.
Always want to give props to SupernaturalWiki.com. But I also found on HiddenRemote.com, they did the 7 best lines from this episode. I guess there's nothing else to talk about. But I'm going to play it for you, because I have it all queued up. This is one of the 7 best lines from episode 7.
My name is Dean Winchester. I'm an Aquarius. I enjoy sunsets, long walks on the beach, and frisky women.
You're welcome.
You're so fancy.
I know. Okay. And then I did my international titles again.
Yes!
Which also comes from Supernatural Fandom. So this is French.
La main de la justice.
I would have butchered the shit out of that, FYI. That translates to the hand of justice. And this is our good friends, the Hungarians.
A faubourg de Bozanne.
Totally wouldn't have got that either. Nope. And that one means on the prisoner's box.
Okay.
I mean,
sure.
So that is all I have for you for episode 7, The Usual Suspects, on my end.
All right. So this might take me a little bit because there's a lot of potential death omens.
Okay.
That I'm going to talk about.
Go for it.
All right. So first off, to start, I will define what an omen is, according to Merriam-Webster.
Like the movie,
the dictionary.
Omen?
Sort of.
The dictionary. In case you guys didn't know what that was.
According to Merriam-Webster, not the lady of the book.
Not the Urban Dictionary.
No, the regular.
Webster's Dictionary.
English Dictionary.
The real dictionary.
The real dictionary, not this fake dictionary stuff. Crazy kids. All right, so an omen is a phenomenon that is believed to foretell the future. Some believe them to be a message from the gods.
Oh.
And I think they just properly said gods to not offend anybody.
I was going to say, not just one, many.
And obviously, each culture has different death omens, but obviously all of them are signifying the potential of death to the person who sees them. So here are a list that I got from listverse.com, also got from folklorethursday.com.
Oh, I like that. Uh-huh. Folklore Thursday. I was
super
Folklore Friday.
You know, you gotta spread it out through the week.
Okay.
SuperstitionDictionary.com and TalkDeath.com.
Oh. Sorry, that one caught me off guard.
You know, when you talk about omens of death.
But that sounds that sounds like TalkSpace or Headspace,
true,
whatever that is. So it's like, okay, TalkDeath. Oh, well. I had a death omen yesterday.
Oh, how was your death omen? Your death omen on Thursday. So some of these I've heard of, some of these I had never heard of. So let's see if you guys had heard of them. Number one, black cat.
Yes.
Which I don't believe because I have a black cat.
Can I stop you 1 second?
Yes.
No, never mind. That's next episode. Take it away.
Okay.
I was going to interject, then realize that was the wrong one, so I'm not going to.
So black cats are one of the most famous omens of death, and they are found in folklore all around the world. But there's different ways that the interactions with black cats work as a sign of danger or approaching death. So one of the examples that I found was that an old German superstition, they say that if a black cat sits at the bedside of a sick person, it's a sign that they'll die soon.
Isn't that kind of inevitable, though, probably, if they're that?
I also want to know how the black cat just got into the bedside table.
Yeah, is it not your black cat?
Yeah, I mean, if it's your black cat, I'm pretty sure it's sat at the bedside for a while now.
Yeah.
Hearing the meowing of a black cat at midnight is another superstition, which could be the omen of someone's death.
How do you know that the cat is black, though?
Yeah, there's a lot of just
Like, if you just hear a cat, you're like, oh, no, that's a tabby. That's not a black cat. It's fine.
One of the things I found is that some of these omens are very specific and like, okay, there's no discrepancy there. Some of them, I'm just like, if you want someone to die, I feel like you're going to feel like they're going to die.
Okay.
So another superstition dealing with black cats is that if a black cat crosses the path of a funeral, it's a sign that a member of the family of the deceased will die soon.
Oh.
The worst part, however, is that because of the superstitions that go with black cats, they don't get adopted very often.
I would love to have a black cat. I would totally adopt you, black cat.
I have a black cat, and her name is Binks.
Aww.
And she's an asshole.
Aww.
Yeah, Binks, she just loves attention. Another omen of death, obviously, is a crow.
Okay.
One of the most famous pop culture references is the film The Crow.
I love that movie.
Starring Brandon Lee, who tragically died during the filming of the movie.
Ugh, so sad.
But that movie does revolve around the idea of a crow being a death omen.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you'll see crows in film and pop culture in cemeteries or around scenes where people might possibly die. But little known fact, if you didn't know this, a group of five or more crows is called a murder.
I did know that.
A group of crows are called a murder of crows. Now they say the omen is that if you see a group of more, so if you see a murder of crows,
not a murdered crow.
Not a murdered crow, but a murder of crows.
Oh, gross. Okay.
It is an omen of illness or death of yourself or someone you know. See, that's where it kind of gets like, you don't know if it's you or like someone in your family or just someone that you know. It's
but if,
just
if it's not you, is it bad to feel a little relieved?
I don't know.
Like, you feel like, oh,
I mean, I think if like, you like, if it's someone you don't like, you can't be like, oh, I'm so glad it was Diana.
That's what I was going to say. It's like Sal down the street or something. You're like fine with that.
So in some cultures, crows are actually believed to be messengers between both worlds.
Oh, okay.
And in the Middle Ages, crows were used as a symbol to cast death spells.
Ooh.
So witches would use crows to deliver the message of death to the people that they were cursing.
Oh. Like Maleficent.
Yes, kind of.
Yeah.
So another omen of death is an owl.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which is strange. So basically, and it's not a specific type of owl. It's not a color. It's any owl.
Oh.
And the omen is basically if you're walking under a tree at night and you hear an owl hooting overhead, it's believed to be an omen that a member of your family is going to die soon.
Okay. That one's a little too broad for me.
Conversely, if an owl is perched on your rooftop, it's also a sign that someone in that house is going to die.
I hope when you're walking under the tree while it's hooting, it doesn't poo on you.
I don't know if that's a good omen or a bad omen.
Well, see, could that like cancel it out? You know, because they say when birds poo on you that it's good luck. So maybe that negates the bad hooing above you?
I don't know, because there's actually a historical basis for one of these.
Really?
So it's rumored that Roman Emperor Antonius, his death was prophesied by an owl that was seen perched above his bedroom door before he died.
Interesting.
Here's the one that I definitely knew, also besides the black cats, was seeing your own doppelganger.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're never supposed to see your own doppelganger.
Zach Bagans taught me about that one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Waverly Hills episode. Oh, I know.
I know about it. So this one actually shows up in a couple of folklores. So it shows up in both German and Irish folklore.
Okay.
And
I'm
basically,
both of those, by the way.
Okay, well, don't see your doppelganger, because if you do, then it's a sign of your own imminent death.
Since we're trying to tell people more about ourselves.
However, if someone in your family sees your doppelganger, it's a potential signal of impending danger or misfortune, but not death.
Oh, but not, okay.
Not death, just misfortune and danger.
Near death, but not total death.
Not completely.
Okay.
So because of this, doppelgangers are seen as like evil twins, and it's believed that if you spoke to your doppelganger, they would trick you and plant sinister ideas in your head. And little known fact, doppelganger is actually a German word, which means double goer.
Double goer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In case you were curious.
I was. I would have Google translated it later, so.
Here's a slightly specific one. Bees.
Bees.
If bees are swarming a rotten tree, it means that there will be a death in the family owning or living on the property that encases the tree.
Oh.
And likewise, if bees swarm a house, it's also a sign of doom to that house.
Doom. Bee doom.
Here's a very specific one. And it's also really fucked up, so I'm sorry.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this one now.
If you see two turtle doves together in a tree.
It's Christmas.
Death is coming.
Oh, well, that's not good.
And if a sparrow attacks a swallow and throws it from its nest, a son will be born and a daughter will die.
Don't they look similar?
I thought it was very interesting that, like, oh, you're going to have a son, but your daughter's going to die. Like,
goes your daughter.
Well, shit. If a bat flies into your house and gets away, so, like, if the bat gets in your house and gets out of the house.
Okay. I thought you just, like, slammed right into the siding. Just, first bat into the house.
This is where it also gets weird. So if the bat gets in the house and gets out of the house, it means that there will be a death in the family. But if you kill the bat before it escapes, everything's okay.
Oh, but you're not allowed to do that.
No.
You're not allowed to kill bats, so you're screwed either way. You either die or you have a bat in your belfry.
And some of these, okay, so I have a dog, and apparently certain things that dogs do are omens of death.
Oh, shit.
Which I didn't know, so Tallahassee, don't do this shit.
Are you going to look for them now?
luckily for me, she doesn't do some of that stuff.
Okay.
She's very talkative, but because dogs can sense the supernatural, the paranormal, they can supposedly see ghosts and feel things.
Oh, I believe it.
They are seen as, like, a seer of death omens, so they communicate these death omens to you. Such as if a dog is persistent at howling under your window, it foreshadows death in the house.
Oh, snap.
Also, if a dog scratches at the floor consistently, that's also an omen. And the howling of dogs in a house with an ill person is not a good sign. But if the dog is howling with its head lowered, that means death.
Oh.
If you have a mouse run over your foot, that foretells death.
Okay.
If you dream of a white horse, it means that you will hear of death before the week is over. And then there are some really random death omens, such as...
more random than we've already...
So,
you've already said.
First off, you'd have to own a cow.
Oh, well, you know what? We just ate ours last week.
Okay, well, good, because if that cow gives birth to twin calves, it means it's going to be a death in the family.
Oh, what?
Mm-hmm.
One, that poor cow, because I don't think cow babies are light.
There's a weird one that if you have a peach tree and it blooms early, it means that there will be a death in the family.
Oh.
If a dish or a glass in your house breaks and there's no one around, it signifies that there will be a death in the family soon, because breaking a glass while drinking to a toast is a bad omen. So, like, if you're toasting to somebody and the glass breaks, like, sorry.
Oh. What if you break it after the person dies?
Don't know.
I did that for my grandma.
Here's a very specific one. And you drink coffee, so be careful.
Oh, shnikes.
Uh-huh. If you're drinking a cup of coffee and you see grinds in the bottom of your cup, if they appear in the shape of a coffin, it could be a sign of your upcoming death.
I was going to say, don't do that to me because I see them often, only if it's in the shape of a coffin.
Yes, it has to be in the shape of a coffin.
What if you quickly move it with your spoon?
I think it's still the coffin.
Okay.
Sorry. in the Appalachians, they have these things called death crowns, which are also sometimes called angel crowns, and they're actually hardened crown-like masses of feathers. And if you find one of these death crowns in the pillow of an ill person, it's an omen of death.
Only if it's in the pillow of an ill person.
Yes.
Okay.
Butterflies.
Does someone have to make the feather gross crown?
No, it just kind of happens on its own.
Appears. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Black butterflies.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So in some cultures, black butterflies aren't bad. So, like, in Celtic folklore, black butterflies are actually the souls of a deceased person.
Okay.
And it's in their culture, if a person fails to find their place in the afterlife, if they can't move on, they turn into black butterflies and sometimes return to like their houses or places that they know.
I was gonna say, I've seen black butterflies before.
Also in places like Brazil, Colombia, China, they're seen as impending death and doom. Spotting a black butterfly in the house supposedly means that a member of that household will die. And in the Caribbean, spotting a black butterfly is a witch that's casting an evil spell on you. And in Mexico, the black witch moth is known as the butterfly of death and is said to enter a sick person's house before they die. Some believe Halley's Comet is a death omen.
Really?
If I think about the most recent death on Halley's Comet.
I don't know.
Heaven's Gate.
Oh, that's right. Hail Bop.
Yeah. I mean, they chose to do it, but...
Yeah. Did you listen to the And That's Why We Drink on that?
Yes.
It was creepy. Like, I remember it happening, but, like, the fact that I didn't know it went in three, like, shifts pretty much that it happened.
So Halley's Comet through the ages has been seen as, like, comets alone. So I watched, because I do nothing but watch Netflix. I watched a special on ancient history, and a lot of wars were decided by comets because they didn't understand them. They actually saw them as a bad omen even then. If you saw one before war, you were likely going to lose.
Oh.
So there's actually tapestries. So Bayou, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Because these people saw comets as messengers from the gods, especially in like Greek and Roman mythology. So there's actually tapestries that'll show things happening like war, and there'll be Halley's Comet or a comet above them in the tapestry. So in Switzerland, Halley's Comet was actually blamed for earthquakes, illnesses, red rain, and the birth of two-headed animals.
Red rain?
I don't know. I'm just reading what I found.
I was going to say, did that actually happen?
It's rain and blood.
Oh,
snap. In England, they believed that the Black Death was attributed to Halley's Comet.
Oh, wow.
And the comet was actually excommunicated.
What?
Little known fact. Halley's Comet was excommunicated by Pope Calixtus III because they believed that the comet was an instrument of the devil.
Do you think he succeeded? Because, I mean, how often does Halley's Comet come around?
Oh.
So, like, it probably didn't come around again in his lifetime. And he's like, yeah, I did that. You're welcome. Excommunicated a comet. Oh, my Lord.
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. solar eclipses are seen as death omens because they believed, because people didn't understand what these scientific phenomena were. Places like the Vikings, they thought that wolves gobbled down the sun, which would cause the solar eclipse. In China, the solar eclipse was blamed on celestial dragons eating the sun. And in Greece, it was a sign of angry gods marking the beginning of disasters and hiding the sun from them.
Oh.
So actually, some historical events and deaths surrounding eclipses are Louis of Bavaria, who was the head of the empire. He witnessed a solar eclipse in 1840 AD, and he was so terrified by it that he died shortly after.
Oh, wow. It scared him to death.
Yes.
Wow.
So in 1133, an eclipse, which was both visible in England and Germany, actually foretold the death of King Henry I. And shortly after the eclipse, the king died in Normandy. In Germany, when that eclipse happened, the city of Augsburg fell, and there was a massacre of its inhabitants by Duke Frederick.
Wow.
So there is something called death knocks.
Knocks.
Death knocks. My dog go crazy. Oh, shit.
Sorry.
So death knocks are three knocks heard at the door and no one's there.
Oh, run.
So if you hear three knocks on a door and no one's there, it means that someone has either died or is about to die. They're known as the three knocks of doom. And cultures that believe that this is a thing are like Ireland and Scotland. The three knock superstition is also in Native American tribes because they believe that spirits are not bound by physical restrictions. They can still make noise, such as knocking. You can also find it in Jewish, Arab, and Indian and African traditions. One of the really interesting things that I found is actually a story about this omen in the Yoruba religion. There's a god known as Orisha, and the tale's called The Oriet and His Brothers. So it follows three brothers who came from a high priest lineage, and they were actually supposed to become high priests through hard work and rituals. However, two of the brothers had no patience, and they were actually jealous of the younger brother who was hardworking and actually put the work into becoming a high priest. So they decided to throw the younger brother off a cliff.
What?
Yep. But he survived in the story.
Okay.
And shortly after this whole thing happened, the two brothers began practicing divination with seashells.
Like in Harry Potter?
And they predicted death. And at the same time that they predicted death, they heard three knocks on the door and saw the younger brother come in.
Oh.
So upon seeing him, somebody who they thought they were, that was dead, and because they're doing divination, they thought they brought back a spirit. The oldest brother actually died of a heart attack, and the other brother was killed by the village once they learned of what happened.
Yes, the village. I guess that goes to show them, huh?
So one of the creepiest fucking death omens that I've heard is something called a phantom funeral.
What?
Yeah. So if you see a phantom funeral, which is essentially a mysterious procession that's almost ghostly in action and figure, is actually the foretelling the death of the loved one.
Wow.
And also, if the person who is witnessing the phantom funeral actually looks inside the casket, they will see their own dead body.
Nope, don't walk up.
And their death will follow.
Why'd you go look? You might deserve it at that point.
So that actually is found in the British Isles as well as Switzerland and Germany. While watching these phantom funerals or processions, you can actually hear the trampling of feet, sobbing, groaning of mourners, voices singing psalms.
Is this like a procession?
Yeah.
Or is it like you're, okay, so it's moving past you. It's not like you just randomly walk in somewhere and there's a phantom funeral going on.
One that really just like disturbs me the fucking most is something called the corpse candles.
Oh, that does not sound good at all.
So it's not what you think, because I thought I was like, oh my god, that's a dead body. They're actually mysterious lights that are white, blue, and yellow balls, or candle flames that appear outside. And they kind of like float and bob and weave in the air.
Okay.
One name that they go by is Ignis Fatuus, which is foolish light, also known as Will-o'-the-Wisp. Or even the jack-o'-lantern, which ties back to the idea of Halloween, that spirits could never pass, so they needed something to light their way.
The wisp thing is in, everything goes back to Disney, in Brave.
Mm-hmm.
She follows the wisp.
So most of these tie back to the idea that these are actually brought by messengers of doom and death. They believe that these candles hover over the home of a person who is about to die. Sometimes they believe that they'll hover in between the house of the person who's about to die and their grave site.
Oh.
And sometimes they will hover over the chest of a sick person. They can also hover over boats of fishermen who will drown soon.
How?
And the other weird one that ties it back into the one that was before this are that sometimes these corpse candles will actually lead somebody to a phantom funeral.
Okay, so don't follow the ball of light.
Do not follow the bouncing ball of light.
And if you do, don't look in the casket.
Don't do it.
Okay. Fight the urge to look into the phantom casket.
And the last one that I will do, because I can keep, there's everywhere, like there's the Beatles and...
The Beatles?
Yes.
Like Ringo?
No, like Death Watch Beatles.
Oh, like Scarab kind of things?
Kind of. So a Death Watch Beetle, they're known for damaging wood.
Oh, like in Practical Magic.
Yes, so that's exactly what it is. So they make that tapping or ticking sound.
Do you like how everything just keeps going back to a movie?
Well, no, and that's the crazy part. So, like, all these things find their way into popular culture, but they're all based somewhere. Because Death Watch Beetles are sometimes associated with sleepless nights, and they're often seen by the bedside of a dying loved one. If you see one or you hear a consistent tapping, it's supposed to bring about misfortune. So here's one that's very specific and I wanted to save it for last.
I'm ready.
Specific to Korean culture.
Okay.
It is called the fan death.
Fan death.
Yes. So in Korean culture, it is believed that if Koreans sleep with a fan running in their room and the windows closed, it will result in immediate death.
Oh, I do that all the time.
In South Korea, fans are actually sold with timers.
Okay.
So that they will be turned off before that person falls asleep.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that's all I got for you. I mean, I could go on. There are death. If you Google death omens, like supposedly if a seamstress pricks her finger while sewing a bride's dress and stains the dress with blood, it means that the bride will die.
Oh, or the seamstress will die because the bride will kill her.
If a church bell rings while a preacher is reading a sermon, someone in that congregation will die.
Wow. So what you're saying is if we Google death omen, we will be going down a rabbit hole.
Yes. I mean, you could go on and on and on about death omen. So I was really excited to see this episode. That was one of the things that I was like, okay, I see you, Usual Suspects. I can get behind this. Because it brought around the idea of the death omen, which I always find very interesting because I'm a very, like, I'm not a superstitious person, but I'm curious about superstitions, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I'm superstitious about stupid stuff. I don't know if it's superstitious or just like OCD where I have to have things in, you know, specific order.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be a little bit of both, a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah, yeah. I like to mix it up, you know.
So that's what I got for you on this episode. Also, throwing it out to anyone who hears this episode, if you have a favorite death omen or superstition, please share it with us because I'd love to hear it because there are so many out there that I'm sure that there's some you've heard that I've never heard of before.
Yeah, or if you know someone who knows someone who knows someone that's
had a death omen.
Yeah. Well, you said that some of them could happen, like if they see one, it could happen to like someone else.
Yeah.
You know, so if someone, you know, has seen a death omen and had a you know, sow down the street you didn't like or someone closer to you pass away, I'd like to know that too.
So please, please tweet at us, share it with us.
Yeah, slide in our DMs on Instagram or Twitter.
Let us know.
Yes.
So next episode, we will dive into the world of the Crossroad Blues.
I'm doing a dance. You see my dance? I'm doing a dance.
That's a nice dance.
I'm so excited for this episode.
This is one of my favorite episodes. I mean, I love the superstition and the legend behind it, but yeah. Also you get introduced to deals with the devil.
Yeah.
And Crossroads demons.
Yeah. I'm excited about that, but I'm excited also to dig into the Robert Johnson story.
Yes. And if you haven't yet, I think it's Netflix.
Netflix.
They have that special on him.
Netflix has a it's called Remastered. Hold on, I wrote it down. I've watched it.
Me too. And if you have the time, I suggest you do it too, because it's got some really interesting information.
Yeah, if you
it's
go
not
on,
very long. It's like less than an hour,
yeah,
about an hour.
Yeah, it's probably about an hour, yeah. It's called Remastered, Devil at the Crossroads. And it's
there
all
it is.
About it's all about Robert Johnson's life. Did he make a deal with the devil? People say he did.
But it follows him and the tragedy that came behind him.
Oh my God, his life was just so, so tough. It is so heartbreaking, things that he went through.
So that, I suggest, if you have the time to do it. Watch it.
Yeah, it's good.
Sweet!
I'm excited!
Alright, so there's your homework. Watch it, so we can talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. We should tweet that. You guys have homework.
If we're doing homework, you're doing homework. We're in this together.
Exactly.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to us.
Thank you.
And as always, tweet us, share us, talk to us. We're friendly. We love you guys. And thank you so much for listening and dealing with that recap of that episode.
That teeny tiny recap and then all that awesome information that happened after.
Yeah.
Okay. What was our tagline? Stay safe, stay weird.
Stay safe, stay weird, supernatural. Stay supernatural.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy. If you want more, follow on Twitter and Instagram at SBNBallsPod or email SBNBallsPod@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and follow Balls on your favorite streaming service.